And welcome back, everybody, to a Monday edition of Bubba and the Bloom. Yeah, you did not miss here that one. We told you guys on Thursday, four episodes this week to wrap up your pockets of ADP. Tuesday and Thursday nights will be live like usual, but we'll get you covered throughout the week here, all the way through 300 and beyond to get you ready for the last 2 weeks of draft season. But before we get to that and much more, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, how are we doing, my friend?
Oh, you know, it's Monday. It's Monday for both of us. So.
It's Monday.
Yeah. Making it work, but we did want to prioritize and kind of lean into this sprint towards draft day. We were just talking, like, we really are running out of time for at least our own drafts, but we thought this was a good week to basically just hammer out these middle rounds, do these ADP pockets, give you all double episodes this week. Lean into the craziness that is the peak of draft season right now. So we're doing it. No regrets, right? No regrets.
Oh, no regrets. This is like the best part of the Monday so far. Getting to record with you. And just like, I can ignore my phone for an hour and a half. Like, this is the best part of Monday right here. So yeah, I love doing this like you do. So no problems. And these are episodes that I say every year help me just as much as hopefully helps the listeners going through this and figuring out the positions, the stats, and like people hopefully already listened to the first episode on Thursday night, Friday morning, whatever you did, and kind of get, it'll be the same pretty much formula through all these episodes. And it just kind of puts it all together. And on the last episode, we'll kind of try to bring it all back type thing, or maybe the Tuesday episode before Vegas, maybe that'll be the, let's recap it, like the roadmaps type deal. We'll figure it out as we get going. But yeah, that's the plan for now. Is we got you guys covered Monday right now. We're recording. I'll drop for you guys Monday night. Tuesday night live, Thursday night live, and then Friday you'll get it at some point in Friday as well, because I forget what time we talked about doing that. So you'll get that sometime thereafter. And yeah, that'll be the game plan for now. All right, let's – anything else on the Vegas trip? You had something else you wanted to mention, I believe.
So we are – yeah, so we – as part of the Vegas trip, we are – so we're covering a lot of the drafts there, and we've got some fun stuff in store for that. But both Bubba and I aren't not leaving Vegas until Sunday night. And so we have decided to do a little Las Vegas Listener League, a $250 entry. So for Vegas, right, pretty low stakes for Vegas, $250 12-team league. We will draft it in person somewhere, either a hotel, a bar, or something. We've already got 7 out of 12 that, you know, ourselves included, that will be in Vegas drafting with us. So we've got 5 spots left. So if anyone out there is going to be in Las Vegas, March 23rd, that Sunday, 11:30 a.m. local is when we're going to kick things off. Should just be kind of a chill, informal way to keep us out of trouble on an all day that we have in Vegas on Sunday. So if anyone's interested and available, Sunday, the 23rd, 11:30 a.m., Bubba and the Bloom Las Vegas Listener League will be going down. So hit us up or via email, BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com if you are interested.
Yep, let us know. It'll be cool. Like Ryan said, more than anything, it's just to keep us out of the sports book / bars and everything, because it's going to be a long weekend to begin with. And we don't fly out till like 8 o'clock that night. So we're trying to find the way to have the most fun, bring a little more Bubba and Bloom fun to Sunday and not just completely go off the rails as – you know, I'm over 40 and Ryan's almost 40, and he's realizing quickly that, you know, after he pulls a groin, things don't heal as fast. You know, those hangovers, they hit a lot different and last longer. So Sunday should be more of a rehydration. Maybe we'll get IVs and do some drafting.
That said, wouldn't be surprised if there's some beers and some noons hanging around the draft table.
Oh, and Ryan made a great point. Ryan was texting me this past week, and we might have another Vegas edition footage for you guys, because that Sunday night is the first fab run in the NFC. Oh, yeah. So we might
totally forgot
each other doing our fab bidding at the airport bar beforehand, and we'll see how that all plays out, of course.
Yeah, just an idea that popped into my head. Probably an idea that sounds good now, but will probably be a total crap show when we are trying to do fab in an airport. I totally forgot that's our first fab run as we're trying to leave Vegas. So that'll I'm sure go well.
Go swimmingly. Go like those drafts that, you know, we did OC
like
all, that I did back
these
in
teams
February.
We drafted like months ago. Ooh. It's like, oh,
yeah. Good times. Good times, everybody. All right. So we'll keep you guys posted on that like usual and see if there's any interest there as we're trying to wrap it up and eventually might turn it over to the online folks. We'll see. We'd prefer to go with as many live as possible, but we need to fill it regardless because we told the NFBC we would. And if we don't, they won't do cool things for us. That's just how this works. All right, let's talk. Pockets, my friend. Pocket number two here. It's one ADP 150 to 120. I mean, to 200, sorry. So real quick, Ryan, give us a rundown of what we're looking at here, and then we'll break it down even further.
All right. Similar format as last time. So for those watching on YouTube on the replay, we've got a hitter board and a pitcher board. This is all positions, all hitters going between picks 150 and 200 with their Fangraphs projections, steamer and the bat. Bat X for hitters and then the bat for pitchers. So again, just a way to kind of look at a list of names, see what this portion of the draft gives you in terms of different categories, but also different positions. Similar thing on the pitcher side. ERA, whip, strikeouts, and saves are the projections that we're showing on the board as well. And I will tweet this out so you all have that visual if you're following along via audio. So fun pocket, I guess. I mean, I'll start with just a few takeaways, and then Bub, I'll throw it over to you. This has traditionally been, and it's funny how some things start to change now that we are like in the peak of draft season. I noticed that building this board today on Monday, that a lot of these prices are different than what we've seen throughout some of the draft and holds. And we'll cover specific examples of that. But this has been previously a part of the draft where I've been taking, kind of waiting on second base, taking a second baseman. You've got Xander Bogaerts, Andrés Giménez, Luis Rengifo, the mascot, again, pre-injury. Bryson Stott. I should add this ADP is March drafts, March 12 teamers on the NFBC. So very fresh, very up to date. But yeah, this is where I've been taking, still kind of plan to take a second baseman. You've got some speed there. You've also got good outfield options. This is still before the point in the draft. I think we're getting close to it, but this is still where you've got, in my opinion, some good everyday stable outfielders. You've got Adelis Garcia, you've got Nick Castellanos, you've got Taylor Ward, who I like, Victor Robles, if you need speed, Kerry Carpenter, like those types are Elliot Ramos. You've still got a good number of outfield options before that starts to die out a little bit. And then the last thing on the hitter side, this was interesting building this board. There is only one hitter projected for more than 25 home runs in this entire group. From ADP 150 to 200, and that's Adelis Garcia.
That's ADP 155,
and that's ADP 155, right? So very much, almost not even on this thing. That surprised me. There is not, like, yes, there's power because there probably are, I don't know, maybe 10 guys projected between 20 and 25 home runs. But, and I've seen this in drafts, it is hard to make up. We talk a lot about hard to make up batting average. It's also hard to, if you fall too far behind in power, there's not these like standalone huge power bats that are available at this point in the draft. You kind of have to piece it together, low mid 20s homers at a time, because again, there's only one hitter projected over 25 home runs in this entire group.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing with the power bats that people talk about later in the draft, a lot of warts come with those power bats that hurt, right? You. So it kind of goes back to when we talk early in drafts, you want to get those elite batting averages. And there's a reason why, even though it's not ideal, like a Pete Alonso or an Austin Riley or Yordan Alvarez, and like a Vlad, even big average, big power, you can figure the stolen bases out later type situation. Cause we do have those more often than not throughout the draft as things go along. So I agree with you in this position. It's a little bit of what you need. You're starting to get to that point of the ADP. It's like, do I want 20 plus home run guys? Do I want 20 plus steal guys? What do I need to fill out my roster? And that's kind of where things go here. Positionally, it's heavy outfield, as you mentioned, especially as you get to the second half of this hitting bloom board here. But as a whole, it's like, it's that second pocket of outfielders we talk about where you usually want to leave with three or four of them. That's a big piece of it. And it's definitely the cliff of where I like taking shortstops. If I don't have a shortstop, I hear I'm really hurting in life.
Yeah, yes.
That's a major concern for me. And preferably have it as one of my middle infielders as well. So that'd be a thing I would look to do as often.
I would also add, first base has died by this point. You've got, I mean, depending on how you think of some of these players, we'll get into more player specific stuff later, but there's a Paul Oldschmidt 165, Toglia 176, an injured Spencer Steer, a Luis Arias. Like, those are your first base options at this point. That's also kind of why we've been saying at first base, we've been wanting to go early there, because at this point, I think you've kind of missed the cliff at first base.
And yeah, I totally agree about the first base comments, because like Spencer Steer, when I updated my rankings, I almost took him off certain positions. Like, he's all the way at the bottom of rankings because the info on his shoulder still no one knows, it sounds like, which is scary. I love it. There's one of the first basemen you put on your fade list, which I'm so glad you did, because the hype train behind him is through the roof right now, which is pretty crazy. So it is definitely a spot, because I mentioned shortstop. I know we're on the same page there. And then with first base, it's like, Goldie, I don't mind. And it's like, if I miss this window, I basically punt the position. And I know it's a joke now, but it's just true. It's like Santana, Josh Bell, Andrew Vaughn. Like, I'm stuck in that window. I'm not going to force it with some of these middle options.
It's fine. There's not much of a difference. There's not much of a difference between those guys.
Exactly. I'm like, screw it. I'll just go all the way to the bottom of the barrel at that point type thing. So anything else on the positions here? Because it is it's definitely starting to differentiate itself on what you need statistically and almost positional as well.
Yeah, no, like you said, you made a good point on the power that is here does come with warts. Speed is just as prevalent as power is, which goes back to what you were saying as well. I mean, pitching side real quick, we'll talk about pitchers, but it's not quite as interesting without like the category balance and stuff, but there are seven closers going in this range.
It's kind of pocket two kind of.
Yeah, I still don't like many of them, but there are options, and I could very well be wrong on many of these closers. A few of them are on my fade list, but there are seven closers projected, and six of them basically projected for 20 or more saves. Justin Martinez projected for 19, which I would take the over on, and then there's Lucas Erceg at 195 at the bottom of this list. So you do have some options for your RP2 at this point, and the price isn't too bad. Just pick the right one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few of them I like here. There's a few we don't want to talk about at all, which you've also got highlighted for later, which is perfect. This range, when it comes to starting pitching, I'll pivot to that direction. Still a good area for strikeouts, which we got that going for us, because that'll start to dry up real quick. Like, they're not elite strikeout guys, they're still pretty good strikeout guys. But more importantly, this is if we look at this ADP in 2 weeks, there's a handful that won't even be on this list. And not because they're going up. There is a triage unit heading is in this section of of the ADP. A couple of guys that aren't even ranked on my ADP anymore are my top 100 pitchers are on this board. There's also a bunch of guys that are going to go because of Healy in the other direction, which we talked about. Your boy Christopher Sanchez, like, the price is wild, yes. And that's going to keep going Sanchez, up.
Yeah, going 154. I mean, that's probably a big takeaway on the pitcher side, I think, is we are starting to see that pitcher movement both ways. Like you said, the injury guy's going down, but I have not seen Christopher Sanchez at a 154 ADP. That is kind of bonkers. I don't even know if I'm in at that point. You've also got Kevin Gausman starting to rise up.
Yep.
I noticed him at 169 in March drafts. That is headed north as well, as Gausman looks good this spring. So that's another thing just to kind of take away with these pocket shows, is like, the stuff's still very fluid. Nothing is set in stone, especially as some of these guys where we thought there might be injury concerns. If they look good in spring, the market is reacting rather quickly to those spring performances.
Yep, spring performances, injuries, it's moving all around. Has a ton to do with it. And just like, yeah, I'm looking at a ton. There's a lot of these young, quote-unquote, potential names. Plus, you got like Pivetta signed and so on and so forth. So it's a range when I've been drafting. I feel like I've been going more pitching in this range by looking at some of the names, because there's a lot of the bats I've kind of like, I've been on a couple of them, but there's also a handful of them I'm just like, nah, I'm good. Don't really want to roll the dice outside of the shortstop thing we talked about. So for the most part, I feel like I'm going pitching, but if the ADP keeps changing the way it's changing, that might not be happening either.
For me, this has been a split. Usually I've been taking like one of the, and then a 15 teamer, you get like three of these picks. 12 teamer, you get four of them. I've been pretty split taking a pitch or two, hitter or two. I don't think there's like a major, at least for the players that I'm targeting or fading. Like, I don't think there's a major lean for me between hitter pitcher.
All right, let's get into it. We do our normal format, ADP debates, targets, fades, all the good stuff. We appreciate the feedback from the first episode. Glad you all are enjoying it. So, Ryan, let's go with your first ADP battle, and it's a doozy, to say the least.
Well, it's just interesting. I mean, yeah, looking at the board, seeing similar positions, very similar projections at very similar prices. And one that shows out to me is Taylor Ward and Nick Castellanos. They are at ADP 179 for Ward, ADP 174 for Nick Castellanos. So basically the same price, basically the same projection, low 250s batting average, low mid 20s home runs. Taylor Ward's projected for 24 compared to Castellanos 21. And I mean, an upper single digit stolen base total, which is not nothing, right? Which is not a zero compared to some of these other guys. So I'm fine with taking either one or even both, because again, that outfield cliff is coming. So they're both kind of like, I don't want to say targets, but I'm fine taking either Castellanos or Taylor Ward. I don't know if you have a preference between the two. Castellanos is a little bit older, but in a bit wilder swing. But Taylor Ward, I mean, Castellanos also has the track record that Ward doesn't have. So I don't know.
I prefer Ward, but similar to you, I do not care which one I get, I guess, if that makes sense. In theory, Cassie's on a better team, so run production should be better. He just continues his steady pace, I guess, is fair to say. It's just with Cassie that feels like, is he going to continue the steady pace is the question. Where Taylor Ward, right, barring an injury, I feel like he's still going to be very productive, and he might get traded, and it makes things even better. That's always an option as well. So in a bubble, I would be fine with either one. I think Ward's got the higher ceiling if it ever clicks fully with Taylor Ward. But weirdly enough, Casty could have a safer floor. I don't know, just because of the run production value. Like, it's extremely tight. That's why they're going next to each other, to what you mentioned. Yeah. It just depends. Do you want the younger guy that might burst out someday, or do you want the old guy that has shown signs of decline but hasn't fully got there yet?
Right, exactly. And on a better team, like you said. So yep. I don't know. With Castellanos, the it's not a perfect comp, but the Javi Baez, yeah, plate approach type thing. That's a skill that doesn't age well. So I do feel like that cliff could be coming, that age related cliff could be coming for Casty a little bit more severely than like a Taylor Ward. So I probably lean Ward, but yeah, I'm fine with either one. Just interesting that I don't know, two guys, same price, similar profiles going next to each other. So figured it would be a good debate, whatever we want to call it.
Good to battle for sure. Second base is a good one here, especially with Ringifo probably going to continue to fall in ADP due to his hamstring situation. But in this little pocket here, you have Andrés Giménez at an ADP of 162, who I know you do like. Luis Ringifo, the mascot, at 164. And Bryson Stott at 165. Honestly, I keep getting surprised that Stott's getting drafted so high after the situations last year, and then you look and he did steal 32 bases still.
Yes.
So it wasn't like it was that bad. And I catch myself every article I do that involves the second baseman looking at Stott's numbers and going, well, it wasn't horrible. How do you look at this one though? Because you got Andrés Giménez, Luis Ringifo, Bryson Stott, all second basemen. You and I talk about waiting on second base. This is kind of that first pocket. If you're waiting on second base, you're like, okay, I'm kind of willing to enter the fray.
Pretty much all the exact same player. Right. High 250s projected batting average, low mid teens homers, and upper 20s steals. So I have been ending up, you know, Andrés Giménez is my guy. I've been ending up with Andrés Giménez even more than the mascot. And I haven't really taken Bryson Stott either. I don't know why we don't like Bryson's, because you were mentioning, yeah, he had 32 steals last year. He had 31 the year before. Yeah. How many guys have 60 stolen bases last two seasons combined?
I'll give you the floor back in just a second. But the reason I am out on Bryson Stott, and it could be a complete dumb move of mine, is they platooned him a lot last year. And I can't live with we're not in platoon land yet.
30.
I know, but if we're looking for ceiling production, the platoon caps that. And that's my only thing. Yeah. So that's my thoughts. Back to your argument here.
And with Stott, it's interesting. Like, he was awful against lefties, had been league average against them previously. So I don't know if that's just a fluky thing, but it you're right. It did. By the end of the year, Bryson Stott was horrendous against lefties to the point where, yeah, he was starting to get platooned. But 90% stolen base conversion rate over the last two seasons for Bryson Stott. Like, I do feel like, and I'm kind of talking my, I have not taken Bryson Stott, I don't think, in a single draft. But at this point, how many guys can you pretty much, I don't want to say lock in, you can't lock in anything, but how many guys can you lock in upper 20 stolen bases with? I mean, that is something to be said for that. That said, I've ended up with Andrés Giménez a little bit more. Rengifo, he's just starting to scare me, man. I know you were mentioned in our Discord yesterday about your mascot slander. I think we're both just, we are worried about that hamstring. It's not good for him to already have tightness in a spot where he's already had issues in the past. So I don't know. I think I'd rank them Giménez, Stott, Rengifo at this point.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. Rengifo, Andy Splinter hit us up in the Discord when I rankings. I told everyone they're updated. Go for it. And I dropped them a lot at every position because the team seems like they're nervous. They're going to slope. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there. That just doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
He had the issue last year with the hammies. It's already coming back this year. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong. But so that leads me to Giménez, who it's your boy. And I've been a big fan. Like, I've been abused. Well, not abused. I've been ridiculed for having him ranked high in previous seasons. People are like, what do you do? I'm all similar to what you're saying. Hits for a good average. He's got 15 plus home run power, 30 plus stolen base ups. Like, there's a dude that's pretty dang good sitting right there. And he's light, might somehow hit at the top of the Jays order. So something to keep in mind in that one. And then with Stott, like, if I just knew he'd play even 100, and if he'd play 80% of the games, I'd be like, okay, we could have a conversation. But if they are going to platoon him, that is not a good thing. And they might not. That might change. We'll see. But that would be my downside there. So, yes, I'm with you. Giménez, Stott, Rengifo for me. In a perfect world, it's Rengifo one, and the rest are far behind. But we don't live in that world right now.
A healthy Rengifo. Where just real quick, where does Xander Bogaerts? I know he's going basically in this range. I didn't group him in this battle because it's a different profile, right? Xander's more that high batting average with a, maybe 15-15 on the homers and steals. I know Sammy Reed was voicing his discontent with Xander Bogaerts, but I think more so from a Padres fandom standpoint and major 100%. Contract standpoint than fantasy. But Xander Bogaerts is someone who I'm targeting here as well, especially if I need more average and I'm better in steals.
Yeah, I think he's a, and this is where we our brains are different. Much better 15 play than 12. That's the way I look at it. Like,
yeah, it's fair.
You're talking 15s. That floor is great at second, short, middle infield, beautiful. In a 12, he doesn't really do anything for your team. If that makes sense. Like, if you're going for the gusto, you can get a similar profile later in a 12, maybe not the average, but everything else you can get later. So that's where I differ. And that's probably why I don't like him as much as you do, because he fits your builds play a lot better than mine. So that's my two cents.
Along the lines of, I'll do the segue for you on this one. Along the lines of 15 and 12, I thought this was a fascinating ADP bet on the pitcher side. We'll flip over there. Just two, like, and we don't need to spend too much time on the individual players, but it's more that it's Seth Lugo versus Brandon Pfaadt, basically going right next to each other, 179, 180 ADP. Totally opposite, I think, types of profiles, right? Seth Lugo's your high floor, low ceiling, just kind of innings eater, productive innings eater, whereas Brandon Pfaadt, posted some ugly ratios last year, but I think we both agree has the ceiling that is much higher than Seth Lugo's, I think. What's your take on those two guys, or just the general profile of what type of starting pitcher you're taking at 180? Because these are not free picks. This is still mid rotation guys. So
again, people, it's a great, like you mentioned, transition and similarities. Is Lugo brings a phenomenal floor, like a great floor to the battle. Like, he's gonna get you, his quality start potential is through the roof compared to Brandon Pfaadt. That's pretty clear, and that's why he's got that. But he needs to accumulate to be valuable. He's a poor man Sandy Alcantara. That's who Seth Lugo is, essentially. So an injury derails the whole conversation with him. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to just accumulate. That's what he is. Nothing wrong with that. Very good. Pfaadt, on the flip side, there's a ceiling that just surpasses Lugo in such a huge way. There's also the youngness of him that can be volatile. That's why your question is where it is. I take thought here 10 out of 10 times the way I draft. That's just me, because A, I learned how to spell his name, so I should probably draft him. And B, again, 12 versus 15s, you want that ceiling play with Brandon Faught. At ADP 180, he's SP 4 or 5 even, probably a 5 as you're drafting in a 12, because that's like round 15, 16, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Faught's definitely in play as one of those type of plays, and that's kind of my two cents on that.
It's just interesting because this is 12-team ADP. I mean, this is 12-team leagues, and they are right next to each other. And you can argue.
That's why I don't mind waiting on pitching. Get like one ace, maybe two. There's so much depth in a 12 to like throw darts at.
Yeah. Yep. It's just if Brandon Faught even does, I mean, I don't think we hit a 4.71 ERA last year. Like, that is straight terrible and hurting you. If you are in a 15 teamer, you are, and Brandon Faught doesn't work out, I think he will. I think the skills are there. And I still think I'd take him over Seth Lugo, but just know, like, if that doesn't work out, you've got a pretty big hole in your rotation, and it is very hard to plug those holes in 15 teamers. So I don't know.
3.65 Sierra. Pretty good.
Yes. Oh yeah. I'll pitch the skills and we would assume that corrects itself, assuming the skills stay as they were in 2024. But you never, I don't know. You never know.
His last 2 months were atrocious. I'm just pulled up.
It was not good, dude. For Faught. Yeah. Meanwhile, Seth Lugo is sitting here.
I think I blocked out part of that. It was
awful. And Seth Lugo sitting here with like a sub 3.60 every ERA, every single season. I'm trying to just like keep my own mind open to taking one of those boring guys, but I don't know. I'd still go Faught, but it's tricky seeing those guys next to each other.
Well, and Lugo's the kind of guy that feels like he'll fall as draft season goes along. So you might become even more attractive as the weeks get closer to opening day. So something to keep in mind. All right. For me, I like this one a lot actually, because we're gonna talk about one of these guys later as well. Taj Bradley versus Gavin Williams. Both have an ADP of 199. Both we think are electric young arms. Taj has been a roller coaster of emotions when he pitches, like the best pitcher in baseball or can't throw a strike. Gavin Williams got hurt, came back, was whatever, dominating in spring right now. Absolutely filthy right now in spring. How do you feel on these two with Taj Bradley and Gavin Williams?
Yeah, basically the same projection. I don't like either one at cost, to be honest. I have not drafted either one. I'm going to assume you're going to be the Gavin Williams guy in this debate. Both of them kind of scare me. Gavin Williams, I mean, what has he done in the majors? Like, he's done absolutely nothing except get hurt and have a good spring and have some prospect pedigree. So you're taking him at pick 200 based on it. I think it's quite a leap of faith. Taj Bradley, we have seen what he can do in the majors, and like you said, Bubba, it's both very good and both very bad. The new park scares me. I think that hurts Taj Bradley. So I have been staying off both, and typically in drafts I've been kind of going more in that round previous, taking like a Faught, Nick Pivetta type of player, and then not just avoiding Williams and Taj Bradley. There's also Mackenzie Gore kind of hanging out, same ADP as well. I've had a couple Gore shares, but no Bradley or Williams. So I'm kind of out on both of them, but you may be out on Bradley, but in on Williams is what I'm predicting.
Yeah. I like Williams out of the two. I liked Williams last year. I liked the price tag. I liked the upside. I'm a believer in the Guardians pitching, obviously, with my Bibee love. Like, I love what they do with these guys that can throw a good fastball and then add their secondary pitches into the mix. And I feel like Williams could be the next one in line. Like, we saw the jump Bibee's taken the last year or two. I think Williams is. And remember, when I meet people might not, but 2 years ago with James Anderson on a preseason show, he said Williams is better than Bibee. Like, that's just, but Bibee's just a year ahead of him in the process, basically. So that's always stuck in my brain. So it's one of these years that healthy Williams takes that jump again in 12s. You want that upside. Phenomenal target here. His ADP is climbing, though, so just be prepared for that conversation. And I love Matt Gore. We know that. I'm a tremendous Mackenzie Gore fan. someday it's going to all click, but at an ADP 200, it's worth a try. So in this range, I have a ton of Gore shares. I have no Bradley shares at all. Williams used to not be in this range, so it wasn't a conversation between Mackenzie Gore and Gavin Williams. Right. It is now. I might go Gavin just to mix it up a little bit because I have so much Gore.
Okay. And you're right. This has not been a conversation we've had to have because Gavin Williams is he is starting to fly up with every inning pitched in spring training. He is flying up those boards. So,
yep, most definitely. All right, let's talk about some targets here and some great ones that if fans, listeners of the show just saw the board, they should be able to predict at least half of these rather easily. So, Ryan, who is your first target?
I'm going to go. You mentioned this before. You mentioned kind of that shortstop cliff. This is where it happens. This is it. I think Dansby Swanson is the end of the cliff at an ADP of 182. Very well-rounded, very high floor, plays every day. Even if he had to have core surgery the day after the season last year, Dansby Swanson is in the lineup. I think super dependable and maybe more of a 15-team play than in 12s. But Dansby Swanson projected for 20 homers, 15 steals, 246 batting average. Like that's going to work. That's going to work. And again, like your next shortstop is Zach Neto, whose price has pretty much stayed the same. You cracked me up this morning on Breakfast with Bubba. You were kind of saying the Angels report that things look promising, yet he can't throw.
Dude, it's a legit video interview with Ron Washington. I'm like, how can you say that like, when he can't throw?
Like literally, I did see some video. Neto was able to throw from or just kind of whatever flick from shortstop to literally second base, like as a double play ball. But yeah, that cracked me up. Yeah, things are progressing nicely. However, he still can't throw. So
it's a key part of playing shortstop. A very key part.
Minor detail. We'll leave that last part of the sentence out there. So that's where you can pick a headline and be like, okay. But yeah, that's another reason why Dansby Swanson's the pick here because after Swanson, Neto's the only one going in the rest of this range, and I'm not a believer in Zach Neto, given what we've actually seen on the field or not seen on the field from Neto. So it's kind of a double. Like I like Swanson. I like the floor. I like the balance, but I also like the fact that you can grab him here and kind of be good at shortstop before it totally drops off.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Swanson. You've convinced me in recent months of doing this whole Mason Winn, Jeremy Pena, Dansby Swanson, little tirade. I think I want Swanson out of the three, preferably. I don't know if I have it ranked that way. I guess it depends on how I build. Like if it's my starting shortstop, I probably want Swanson. If I feel comfortable there, I want to take an upside play at middle infield, I'd probably go elsewhere. But I like Swanson a lot. I'm honestly surprised he still is ranked here in ADP. And I'm also surprised Neto hasn't fallen more at ADP. So right. We'll see. Similar, we talked about shortstop tier, so it's only fitting that I knock one out here too, and that's Jeremy Pena, who feels like doesn't get the love he deserves, I think, or maybe he does. Maybe I just like him more than what we're looking at here on the ADP. His ADP is 167. Now, I agree, Swanson should be ranked higher than him, so he is going 15 picks higher, so maybe he is getting the love, and I'm just being kind of naive about this. But what I love about Pena is he's going to be he's supposedly moving towards the top of the Astros lineup, which will increase the run production, which is huge. But he's had at least 70 runs every year. Whatever. Great. But we saw plate discipline, 3% better strikeout rate last year, which is what we want to see from this young bat. Plus, we see a guy that's hitting basically 265-ish, 260, 265 every year. So that's a nice thing to pencil in. It's not a great average, but doesn't kill you at the same time. And more importantly, we're seeing a guy that he's going to probably hit you 15-plus home runs, and he has the potential to steal 20 bags. But it's like a 15-15 floor is the way I look at it, with a good average and at least 150 runs in RBIs combined. Like, you got this, like, very good, solid profile. Like, Swanson might, if he clicks on all cylinders, could have a better season for sure. But at worst, you get a very good floor with Jeremy Pena. And if you miss after this, this is what I wanted to highlight. So we talked about this little tier, and we'll talk about these guys in the next episodes, but it goes Rafaela, Willie Castro, Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, Fitzgerald. That's just in the next 100 picks. That's it. The rest are after 300. So there's only four or five. There's five shortstop eligible players in the next 100 picks after Zach Neto. So like, it is a gigantic cliff that takes place here. Not just production, but availability in your draft.
Just so, bodies yeah. at that point. Yeah.
So this is where it's very key. And that's why we've hammered it all off season. And we're going to continue to, because I don't see it getting any better.
And like some of those guys are like Rafaela's outfield. Maybe you play him there. Slick Willie's everywhere. You might not even play those guys at shortstop. So it even further hammers it home. I'm glad we talked more shortstop than we haven't even mentioned catcher so far. This is impressive.
Document folks. I didn't bring it up.
I other did guy. It.
All right, who's your next one here? Because this okay. is definitely one of your boys. Here's this is one of your boys. Again, I said people should have guessed most of our picks. This one to a T.
Yeah. So this is Cy Pivetta. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and somewhere in between, Bloomfield expresses his love for Nick Pivetta every single day, every single year. I'm back in on it with the move to San Diego. I think that's the juice I needed. To get rid of my Pivetta fatigue and be back in. Yeah, exactly. To keep me going. I just needed that little hit of Pivetta heading to San Diego. So I just think, I mean, I had Pivetta's box in the forecaster and I ended up upside of 350 ERA. And I said, one of these years, right? And that, again, that's before the move to San Diego. So again, this is somebody who, I mean, we all know Nick Pivetta at this point. He's never had a sub-4 ERA in his career, at least since COVID, as I look up his forecaster box. But the skills are absolutely there. It's been the homers for Nick Pivetta. Fly ball rate spiked last year up to 48% for Pivetta, and the homer to fly was inflated as well. But I just think sheer regression and the park helped that homer problem a little bit. The missed bats are still there. The control is still there. Even the volume, like 140-plus innings the last three – or 140 plus innings each of the last 4 years. It's been 155, 180, 143, 146. Like that's pretty good. Still 31 years old. I think Nick Pivetta, I think this is the year, man. He gets under a 4 ERA. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. He's another big time ceiling play. It's just a matter of can he put the innings out there. If he does that, he's going to return all the value. Yeah.
And I don't even know like the floor is that bad, because we all like to make fun of Nick Pivetta, but like the last two seasons, it's been a 112 and a 113 whip. That's really good. And the ERA has been 404 and 414. Like, that doesn't really hurt you. Strikeouts have been there. Like, I don't know if the floor is that bad with Pivetta either.
I'm guessing, again, pure speculation here, that part of, like, just the joking about the floor is there's, like, that season in Boston where he's just a piggybacker. And he wasn't even a starter because he went to the bullpen and Jimmy jacked around. But I'm with you. I think he's great. And, I think this year I'll get rid of a lot of those naysayers. Let's say that much. All right, let's talk a closer. If anybody can look at the list and pick the closer I'm going to pick, you are correct, because should be an obvious one. That's Kenley Jansen. We are a huge fan here. Ryan mentioned earlier there's like six closers on this board, seven if you count Lucas Irsig, I guess. And Kenley, to me, just feels like the dude. We've talked about it year after year. The ratios might get a little worse, but they're not horrible. Strikeouts drop a little bit, still pretty good. And he's going to get you 20-plus saves almost every season. Now he's going to have an IL stint probably. He's going to scare you with his back because he's getting old. That's what a 37-year-old closer is going to do. He's been pitching in the big since he was 22. That is insane to think about when you say it out loud. But he's had 20 or more saves in every season since 2012 of non-COVID seasons. He's put 27 or more saves in every season since 2013. So he's almost a 30 save guy since 2012, essentially. With again, ratios, strikeouts to boot, he's still a 10 per K guy. He's still giving you almost a 20% K to walk. I have zero problems with him. I love him as my RP2. I think he's phenomenal. So I just take Kenley Jansen, sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Yep. I'm not gonna debate you on that one. I like Kenley more than all of the relievers going around him. We were kind of curious once he signed with the Angels, like what's that price going to land at? And it turns out 163. That's quite palatable. I'm fully on board. As much as folks love to see us go back and forth and throw haymakers at each other, I'm with you on Jansen. I think that's the move if you're going RP2 in this range.
I just want to throw this out here because we'll talk about Kyle Finnegan in a coming episode. But when he got signed, like, he's in the next tier. Pretty sure. I was just looking at, well, this is where I was going to go with this. Yeah, he's at one right now as we speak over the last week, 197, but he's gone as high as 123. So he would have been in the last episode. So that's my point. he's on the up, as they say. And if you guys listen to this by the end of the week, he might be in this tier, is what I'm trying to get at here. So be prepared for the Kyle Finnegan to continue to rise, because we thought Kenley Jansen area made sense.
Yep.
All right, who's your third target in this range?
Third target, I haven't really talked about too much, I don't think. So maybe this is new, but it's Tommy Edman at an ADP of 193. I think the playing time is going to be there. I think we are another, 5 months removed from the wrist surgery that made me question whether or not Tommy Edman was alive for much of the 2024 season. Not only did he prove me wrong there by showing me he was alive, he in fact did hit for pretty good amount of power once he did come back with LA at the end of last season. I think the stolen base floor is very high. He's going to get you some average, and I would take the over on the 13 projected home runs that we're looking at here for Tommy Edman as well. You might also get in season middle infield eligibility at some point somewhere, and I think that is even more valuable once guys start going down and Tommy Edman gets middle and outfield. So for all those reasons, I like Tommy Edman. I don't think he gets you the steals. He doesn't set you back anywhere. And those hidden runs, more so runs than RBI, I think are going to be there in the LA lineup. And I think you know better. You know the playing time stuff more than I do, but I feel pretty good that Tommy Edman will play most days.
Barring an injury, I'd be willing to shoot towards 150 games between second base. It feels like he might actually start the season at second base. There's still moving parts in play here, but the Dodgers are almost begging Outman or Pajes to play good enough to start them in center to put Edman at second, it feels like, because they want Kim in the minor leagues. That's just where it all kind of feels like it's going. Pure speculation, of course. But I think Edman's going to be out there enough to get things done. I like Edman. To me, he's a great floor play, because I just don't know what the ceiling is with him. But like you mentioned, all the stats are very good. There's nothing wrong with them. I just don't know if he ever breaks through the glass ceiling to make that kind of stuff work is the only thing. All right. For me, my third target is Jerickson Profar. And thank God for now, it's a bruised wrist. I'm still holding my breath. If you listen to Breakfast with Bubba, because we saw this story a lot last season of, oh, he's fine. Wait, 3 days later, it's fractured. He's out for 6 weeks. So I'm still waiting on this one. But what we saw last year with Profar, 24 homers, 10 steals, 280. We know the all-star season in San Diego. We saw a decent year in 2020, but it's by far career season for Profar. And I'm not crazy I hate gambling on career seasons, but we're also not paying a premium for a career season. I think the projections aren't fair on Profar, honestly. They got him hitting 250, 255, mid-teen home runs, seven steals. I think he's more of a 2010 guy in an Atlanta offense that's very, very productive. I think he could maybe run into a 265, 270 batting average. He's going to hit towards the top of the Braves lineup. There's so many things that if you just look at projections alone, they're using too much of the past with him when that's how projections work. That's fine. They're not factoring who he might be now and the team context. He is 32 because he has been playing in the big since he was 19 years old. But I think the projections just aren't doing him justice. I think there's a higher ceiling to him than what they're giving on. I get the concerns, though. Career year. Can we move on from that? But I do like some Jerickson Profar.
Yeah, I'm not as high as you on Profar. I think the projection is fine. And I think, this is where we debate this stuff all the time. I do think, for as good as Jerickson Profar was last season, a lot of it with pretty legit skill support, are we willing to throw away basically an entire career of suck? you can. And if it works out and Profar is the same guy who he was last year in that lineup, this is absolutely a good pick. I'm just throwing out the possibility that you're getting somebody coming off a career year who has a track record of really not doing anything. So that's the downside with Mr. Profar. We just talked about Taylor Ward, Castellanos. I've been going those two over Profar in pretty much every draft. So
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I just got my first Profar share in TGFBI. So I can't say I'm all in, but I'm very much, he wasn't in this tier before either. When he wasn't signed, I was not drafting him. Right. Signing with the Braves is a major factor for this in me.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk fades here. Three fades each. Let's cue them up. I am so pumped you put this one on the list, because I saw it. I'm usually the heel on this show. I'm usually the one that likes to stir the pot. But no, Ryan's going for half the fantasy community's jugular with this one. And yes, I am so here for it. I got my popcorn. The floor is yours, friend.
I think, I don't know, man. I think you're more fired up about this than I am. Like,
it's more like I said, because you usually wrote his name the pot like I do. I guess it's fun.
This really got you. This is like a shot of Celsius into your bloodstream.
Monday, here it is.
Yeah. If you ever down, just tell Bubba you don't like Michael Toglia in 2025 fantasy baseball drafts. That'll get him back. For me, it's the plate approach. It's just so bad. It's a mid 30 strikeout rate. It's a ton of swing and miss for Michael Toglia. And I think the floor with that type of player is just triple is a minor league player, right? Isn't it somebody who's playing in the minors like by midseason? And so, like, yes, the barrel rate was awesome last year. Yes, he ran a little bit and was successful on the base paths. He's 26, and maybe this is some kind of mid-career spike. But even with everything that Michael Toglia did last season, the plate skills, I can't get over the plate skills. A batting average it's a projected 226 batting average. I mean, that kills you. And that's even if he hits the projection. Like, I don't even know if Michael Toglia does that. He hit 218 last year. 218! Like with again, the plate skills to kind of back that up. So I just think if you take Toglia, it's just very risky. It's very risky. I've not ended up with Toglia anywhere, and I won't. So,
like, I can see the ceiling if somehow he goes like Brenton Doyle and lowers the K rate by like 8% and figures it out. I just don't know if he has that in him, because the power is undeniable. So I get that, Mark. But I don't think I have maybe one share of Toglia. I actually take him an underdog because of that volatility he brings to the table, but nothing to do in a redraft. Rob Silver's been on some heaters lately with the LED of the Cruz tweets and everything, which I fully support. He had one a couple days ago about Michael Toglia, because someone made a bold prediction that Toglia hits 35 plus home
runs. Oh, yeah, I did.
So in Rob Silver fashion, which, again, I love this, he quote tweeted it and says, "My hottest baseball take of 2025 is Michael Toglia won't end 2025 on a major league roster because baseball teams are smart and they will stop throwing him fastballs and he will swing and miss." I'm like, that is just bingo.
So let me push back on you a little bit. If you're so anti-Toglia, like, what's the difference between...
I just thought it'd be good.
Brace yourself.
Carlos Santana and Michael Toglia?
No, Matt Wallner. What's the difference between Matt Wallner and Michael Toglia? And, like, because you're so in on Wallner. Wallner's cheaper. I get that.
There's your
but,
first
like,
answer.
Why the dichotomy between Toglia and Matt Wallner? I feel like they're very similar type players.
They are similar, I'll give you that. But with Wallner, we've seen him hit for 259 and 249 last years. That batting average is tremendously different.
Okay. Yeah.
Than Michael Toglia.
That's fair.
Like some guys, like Baez did for years, he can make it work long enough. Now, can Wallner fall off the map? Sure. I'll give you that. But we've seen him at least hit for a respectable average to survive at the big league level.
Okay. That's fair. I still think they're similar. We won't make this a Matt Wallner fest.
We got that show coming up.
That'll be whatever later this week. Can't wait.
Yeah. Can't wait. All right, so to stay on brand for me, one of my faves will be Alec Bohm once again. ADP, like, if you like, you know, third base, if you need a good floor play, whatever, ADP is 172. Dude will hit for average, but the power is rather non-existent. He's got 97 ribbies the last 2 years, which is nice, but definitely that's a stat you can't just count on, which is weird. He got back-to-back 97s, but you're basically paying for a batting average with no steals, 15 home runs at a corner infield position that you can get better production from, maybe not in batting average, but all like 3 to 4 other categories as drafts go on. Like, I know we already talked Chapman. Suarez is in the, like, I'd rather take Antonio Suarez, honestly, and take the ceiling play with him over Alec Bohm, or you just punt the position at third base like I do in a lot of drafts. So I'm just out on Bohm. He's a floor play, and if he hits a slump or hits an IL, he's basically not going to do anything for your fantasy team, obviously. So I'm out on Bohm.
I actually drafted Bohm in TGFBI. Felt terrible. Just felt awful.
It's not a pick you walk away and go champion.
No, you just don't. No, say that. It's just like, granted, I needed. It fit my team, I guess. I needed batting average, But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know. There is something to be said for hitting a batting average, getting on base in that lineup and volume your way. That's part of why those RBI totals are so good. But no, I don't would certainly not think Alec Boehm gets another 90 plus RBI season. You just need so much volume for him to come through. I'm with you. Like the second I clicked draft on Alec Boehm, very questioned what I was doing in life. So
yeah, like if he was 50 picks later, I'd be like, okay, we could have a conversation, but not at this point in the draft.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your next one? Because again, this is one that if people listen to the show, should have nailed down pretty well.
Right. It's a dual fade. I'm gonna loop Alexis Diaz and Pete Fairbanks both in here. I just think Diaz is just not a good pitcher, and you've got Francona there now in Cincinnati. Like, I don't know how much of a leash Alexis Diaz has. A 154 ADP. That scares the hell out of me. Pete Fairbanks is a better pitcher than Alexis Diaz, but I just worry about injury. Pete Fairbanks cannot stay healthy. And then also I think the Rays trade Pete Fairbanks, and I don't think Pete Fairbanks is dominant enough to just assume that when Fairbanks gets traded, he will be a closer on his new team. So Alexis Diaz, Pete Fairbanks, both at like 155 ADP. I am out on. Similar to your Kenley Jansen target, I'm taking Jansen. I'm taking Kyle Finnegan over these two. I'm taking Ryan Pressly over these two. I'm taking Justin Martinez over these two. So it's not just that, like what I said about Diaz and Fairbanks, it's mostly also the price. Like, I think there are better relievers going later in the draft. So those two are full fades for me.
Yeah, zero Diaz shares. I think I had one early Fairbanks share.
You took Fairbanks in meatball, but that's way meatball. Early. It's early.
Yeah. And if every time I see him on a draft board, so the Alec Boehm feeling, it doesn't feel good. I'm going to stick to the closing situation here with Ryan Pressly. And this is not just a Tout Wars comment here. This is just the reality of the situation. Presley's 36, so he's almost as old as Kenley Jansen. But Kenley Jansen continues to do it, where Presley's had injury health concerns over like two or three of the last four seasons. We've seen him missing times with some weird nagging injuries, which already concerns me. We've seen the ratios, they're good but not great, and we've seen the strikeouts have dropped last year tremendously, which is a tad bit concerning with a 1.34 whip on top of it, which should be on my team, not yours, Ryan. Not to mention, I think he's there to help Porter Hodge, not take Porter Hodge's full-time job in Chicago. Like, Presley will get his saves, but at the same time, like, yeah, if we're talking about the Fairbanks and the Diazes of the world, Presley's another one of those guys where I'm like, yeah, he's okay, but like, I'd rather have Justin Martinez, Jordan Romano, and that are going right around him than Ryan Pressly.
So yeah, I took Pressly and Tout. Wasn't like stoked about it. I'd still take him over Diaz, Fairbanks, probably Romano as well. Like, I do think Pressly had to waive his no trade clause to go to Chicago, and it is a pretty ironclad one. I don't think he just goes to Chicago to help Porter Hodge. I think he is the guy. I don't know if Sarah Sanchez agrees with me on that take. Took Porter Hodge a few rounds after I took Pressly in that same Tout Wars draft, and to be on a different page as Sarah on the Chicago Cubs is probably not a good place to be, but that's how I read the situation, and so that's what I'm sticking with it. And Presley's skills, that though in decline, I think are still good enough to hold down the job that I think he has to start the season. So it's not like a smash for me, but he's certainly not a fade. I think if you need a RP2 at pick 180, I think you do it and hope for the best. But I don't know. Justin Martinez, I might give you that one. I'll probably take Martinez over Pressly.
And the real answer is I'll take Kyle Finnegan over all. So,
well, you know, Finney is, yeah. I mean, Finney's not any good either, but
he's gonna crush me when he sucks, because I'm like, all.
Like, dude, I mean, what's the difference between Finnegan and Pressly? Like, I guess Finnegan has a longer leash, you would say.
Yes, there you go. Pressly. You nailed it. There,
I don't. But I don't know if I agree. I don't know if I agree with that. But that's
that's my
agree to disagree
for sure.
I think they're like the same dude. I think they're the same guy.
Ooh, that is That might be a beer bet coming down the line right there. All right. Who's your last one here? Because I have zero shares for this player as well.
Yeah. So like how I mentioned that, like, what has Gavin Williams ever done in the majors except get hurt and have good prospect pedigree? Like, the exact same thing could be said for Shane Baz. I need to see something. I need to see skills. I need to see health, mostly health. I guess we can assume the skills are maybe there, but I think the market is placing a hell of a bet on Shane Baz as a 187 ADP. The projections are terrible, but how do you even project somebody like this? I need more of everything. And Shane Baugh's like, I'm totally out. Not that this should matter, but I think he just got smoked in his last spring training start, which again, that shouldn't factor into anything, but it's just like, I don't know, reinforces a floor that I think is pretty scary with Shane Baugh.
Yeah, I'm concerned about a lot of things. I believe the talent is legit. Millions of questions about health, usage, ballparks, you name it with him.
Right. Like, so, I mean, yeah. Hasn't had 120 professional innings in his career. Like,
that's a guy you should be drafting at like 280.
Yes. Not 180. Like, agreed.
Yes. Agreed. That's the concern. It's like, if Boz's price was a lot cheaper, I'd have probably a share or two, but not at this point. Like, go get drafted around Kumar Rocker and we'll have a talk.
I was trying to think of, right, good call, good pull. I was trying to think of like who is going at like 280 that would comp. And like, yeah, I would take Kumar Rocker 100 picks later, whatever picks later, and then Shane Baugh. Yep.
All right. So my last fade is a teammate of Shane Baugh and somebody we mentioned earlier in Taj Bradley. And I just wanted to kind of highlight a couple more things because I love Taj. Like, we talked about Taj in the show. We picked up Taj. We drafted Taj in recent years. I think he's going to be very good. It's just where he's getting drafted. The inconsistencies are rough. Like, I'd rather go Gore, Gavin, Arrighetti right before him. You have Eflin right before that, Pivetta. Like, this window of starting pitchers, that risk with Taj just doesn't fit the risk. I'm like, the other guys are still risky. I'm not saying they're not, but the Taj risk is real. Not to mention that new ballpark, I just don't want to deal with Rays pitching right now. I have so many questions about that ballpark. It's not the Trop anymore. Some projections are like, I think the bat are supposed to be factoring in the new ballparks. But as a whole, we're using a grouping of projections when we do stuff. And a lot of these things are just using averages of seasons and different recipes that evolve the Trop. That's just the reality of the situation. Not to mention the Rays just finagle innings pitched. Like, you look at Taj Bradley, and I know he hasn't been fully healthy all the time, but it's 104 innings, 138 innings. It's like projections have him, like, Steamer's got him going 170. I don't think he gets to 170 with this team. Like, so that's the other factor involved here. It's love the talent, love the kid, want him to do well. Maybe I'll draft him next year. Right now, it's a no for me, dog.
Some very interesting and confusing usage patterns with Taj Bradley in the Rays in recent years. It's a good point.
Yeah, that's my bigger problems. All right, so that wraps it up. Final thoughts on this board before we get to some listener questions, my friend. We'll kind of give our final thoughts on here before we probably go down rabbit holes elsewhere.
Well, I'm sure we'll go down rabbit holes on listener questions. We covered a good bit, and then I think we're going to cover more with these excellent questions from our fine Discord community.
Yep, and we have to pre-record and whatnot. The Discord are listener questioned people. So here you go. Now, this is the fun part for me, trying to figure it all out. All right, BP in the chat says, I have both Justin Martinez and Irsig as potential keepers in a 14-team mixed league, save plus holds league. I think I like them better in that format. Agree. I'd say 100% better in that format.
So, I mean, you're the one who's played. You played in the tout whatever format that had this saves and holds. So like, yeah, I think it's obviously easier to say that they are better in saves and holds. But like, you would know this more than. But aren't a bunch of relievers better in saves and holds leagues? So like, does Justin Martinez? I don't know. I don't play in these leagues. Does Justin Martinez and Irsig, while their individual value may improve in the vacuum because they get holds, are they just more generic type relievers that you can get later in that type of format?
I guess to kind of the point you're making is kind of one thing I'm thinking as you started talking, it clicked immediately, is what are your keeper rules? Can you keep everyone? Can you only keep four? Like, if you only keep four, you're not keeping either one of them, probably. Like,
right.
So I think that's kind of where you're going with this. Like, you could get a reliever later or not even keep, essentially. I agree 100% with that. That I agree with. Now, if you're keeping like 12 guys, well, Martinez and Irsig probably are pretty darn good, like all things considered, because there's a couple things with saves and holds. Is some of the really good closers, they still get a lot more saves than the better holds guy. Like, there's like three or four just dominant holds guys where you might have like seven or eight closers that are pretty darn good. So if Martinez or Irsig could run hot, that's great. with Ursig, I'd almost take him over Martinez in this format because Ursig's either going to close or work the eighth almost every game. Like, that's locked in. Martinez is either going to close or get the night off, probably, if that makes sense. So if I had to pick between the two, I'd take Ursig in this situation. Martinez's volatility with control is a different story. A lot of it comes down to what's the keeper situation. And it's also a 14-team league, Ryan, so that'll also deplete the options a little bit more than other formats. But to your original point, because I like to go down the wrong areas here, yes, with saves and holds, the relief pitching pool gets basically watered down. It's the best way I can put it.
That's what I've kind of, that's been my takeaway listening to you and a few others in that league. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that and not all negative, but I think there's ways to do better, and that's probably for another show. All right, our buddy Lucas Beery says, who's your biggest FOMO arm? No shares yet in this bunch. So we'll start there. He's got two-parters. Who's your biggest FOMO arm? That's a good question, actually.
Great question, Lucas. And I'll bring up someone who I haven't really talked about, mentioned him in passing, Kevin Gausman. I've been a huge Kevin Gausman guy.
The other day. I remember that, yeah.
I know. I was like, man, I don't want to trust this, but like Kevin Gausman, I have been a huge, huge fan of in previous years. And this year I have been totally out on. Looks good this spring. And that is the type of spring performance that I like. Should we take more stock in than your typical spring? Climbing up boards, 169. If this is a Kevin Gausman, like a vintage Gausman season that you can have at pick 170 or even cheaper earlier in draft season, that's going to be my biggest fear of missing out. Pitcher in this group for sure, because it's right there for you to take him.
It's a great call because I have zero as well, but for me it's a guy, I don't know if it was this show we talked about it or you and me just in our text talked about it or before our show, it's Kodai Senga for me at ADP 154. And it's definitely more of a 12 than a 15, because you need, he's very risky in a 15. I get it, but there's two trains of thought here. He's quote unquote healthy, he's looked great this spring, that's awesome. If he is healthy enough to throw 140, 150 innings, his ceiling is way more than pick 154. Like, this guy is filthy. We've seen him when he's healthy, the splitter and the ghost, whatever, and all that stuff. It's outstanding. So, like, if we were told already, and you might have it at your, I don't know if your stuff's up or not, don't worry about it if it's not. But like, if you look at Kodai Senga and we look at a guy who's right now coming off a season where I don't think he threw more than what? 5 1/3 innings. So you got that previous season through 166. If they throw him back into 150, like ATC has, like the bat has, you're talking about a sub-4 ERA with, I think the strikeout to walk ratios, like they haven't walked in a ton of guys, which I don't agree with at all. So I think the whip's lower. I just think there's a massive ceiling with Kodai Senga that you don't get from a lot of guys in this range.
And I have no ghost. Is that his pitch?
It's like the ghost ball thing. The ghost fork. Yeah.
I like all these new. I know I'm going to sound like an old now because all the olds like complain about the sweeper and shit. Like, I'm not complaining. It's just funny. There's like kick changes and ghost forks and all this crap. Like, mark my words. Like, every broadcast, it's going to be annoying. Every major league broadcast, the announcers are going to complain about kick change and why they're calling it kick change these days.
It's okay. To your old comment, I was golfing with some buddies yesterday after the round, having a beer and some lunch, and we were complaining about the term atmospheric river in a storm that we never heard of until like 6 years ago. Now every storm that comes to the coast is an atmospheric river. Similar to what, that's why I laughed when you said them all. Yeah, we're old. And this is what we're complaining about.
Complaining about, yeah, like what we call like, things. Like, yes, we suck.
We called it rain. We called it rain. That's why I laughed when you said it. And then Beery, Lucas's other is, what's your favorite clicks in this group of arms? Like, who's your top? We kind of talked about targets already. So
It's always comforting to go Chris Sanchez and Pivetta here.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ryan did not mention Sanchez because we kind of hit on it earlier. Price is high all of a sudden.
Yeah. And I don't even know if I'd go, it's 154. I don't know, dude. That's even for me, that's pushing it. This is someone, the price is rising because the velocity looks good in spring. And I think of all the reasons to push someone up, that is not one of them. So yes. I don't know, man. A 154 Chris Sanchez, I don't know if I'm actually in at that point. I don't know. We'll see.
Non-zero chant says, how far does Jurickson Profar's ADP fall? Wrist injuries are never good for hitters. Have you adjusted your projections? I have them pretty much in this range. It doesn't fall till I hear it fractures. If it's just bruised and it's opening day, it doesn't bug me. So I think he's sticking for a little while longer. But what about you?
Agreed.
Yeah. Now if it comes out fractured, I'd then say it's like a hundred. That's like a hundred. To me, it's at least 100 pick drop off because I don't want to deal with the broken wrist right out the gate. All right. Our buddy GP Churchill says, given Matt Heckman's assessment of Toglia's plate skills, I was on the bench with Bubba Rocky's preview. How big is an overdraft at 176? I think we nailed that one already.
Yeah, I made my Toglia impression felt, and if old Heckman's there with me, I'm good with it too.
Old Heckman. Pilster says, what is Nick Pivetta's realistic ceiling and best case scenario? Can he finish top 10 in an AL or an NL only? So top 10 NL only. I know the ceiling's high, but top 10 NL only.
You do know we are big on nicknames, and we do call him Cy Pivetta for a reason. Top 10 NL only, that may be pushing it. I think realistically, Pivetta could be a top 15 NL only pitcher, top 30 overall starting pitcher. If it clicks, if the results pair up with the skills in that park.
Yep. Agreed. And then Non-Zero Chance also says fade Alexis Diaz ?
Oh yeah,
he took a step back at ERA, so yeah, we're definitely on the fade Alexis Diaz train. I have not even come close to clicking that button in a draft this season.
Same. Yep.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up there, my friend. Another one in the books. We'll come back Tuesday evening with pocket preview number 3, ADPs 200 to 250. Any final thoughts?
That's it. We'll keep on plugging away. Hope these are helpful for you all, as helpful for you as they are to us. Because, like you kind of said at the top, Bubba, these kind of get us going and recalibrated with the latest movements in market. So if nothing else, it selfishly is a good exercise for me to go through in these middle rounds.
Completely agree, my friend. So we'll be back with you guys on Tuesday again with episode 222. But for now. This was, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at B. Dientrich. This was Bubba the Bloom, episode 221. Catch y'all next time.